has felt like spring these past few days. Is it safe to start planting in the garden? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our gardening show, our experts will explain what we can do outside and when we should pump the brakes. We'll also talk about what's causing a shortage of locally grown strawberries and how to protect your boxwoods from very hungry caterpillars. Corey just gave me a look. Joining me now are Ohio State University Assistant Professor of Entomology and Hamilton County Extension Educator, Joe Boggs. Welcome back, Joe.
Oh, glad to be here, and I'm glad to be sharing Corey's favorite plant.
And that leads me to Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation and Boxwood Skeptic, Corey Christopher.
Oh, no.
Thanks for being here, Corey.
Thanks for having me.
And Brick Gardens founder, Dominique Peebles. Welcome back, Dominique.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Nice to hear you again, Lucy.
Great to have you. If you have questions for our experts, and we know you do, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Now, we're going to talk about all this important local gardening news, but first I have to ask you all, have you all heard about these $19 strawberries? Here's Alyssa Antosi on Instagram.
Okay, this is a $19 strawberry from Erewhon. So we're going to eat it. It's from Kyoto in Japan. And apparently it's like the best tasting strawberry in the entire world. So
this is one strawberry that costs $19. And it doesn't even appear to be the size of a basketball or something. Dominique, what do you think about that? What do you think should make a strawberry, or what could make a strawberry worth like $19 or $20?
So I'm definitely not, I'm a skeptic on this. And my brain is telling me, from what I've found out, is that I think these are strawberries that are being grown indoors. So hydroponically or aquaponically or whatever. But I think if they're not being genetically modified, which I think I've also read that they're saying they're not, then that price point has nothing to do with the fact that they can only grow certain amounts of these strawberries in the space that they have. So they're going to have to make some of that money back for the machinery they're probably using. Now, I haven't been able to taste one of these things. If I ever come across one for free, I'm definitely going to try it. But I would much rather be on the side of going out and spending my $19 on, you know, a bowl of strawberries or a bucket of strawberries versus just one. So I don't know.
Yeah, free sounds like the right price point for me. Corey, what do you think about this?
You know, I love strawberries, but to pay $20 for one single berry that's been flown over from Japan, right? I just think about the environmental impact of a single strawberry, and you're paying $20. I just can't fathom having the luxury to afford that.
Maybe some of that $20 is for like carbon offsets or something.
It would have to be something. I just can't imagine.
Yeah, Joe, what's your take on this?
Well, you know, the words from P.T. Barnum keep coming in my mind. And so my understanding, though, is I think they're selling them near a bridge in Brooklyn, which is also for sale.
Is that right?
Well, I can't help myself.
Well, Dominique, let's talk about regular people's strawberries, like strawberries that we can afford in different places. Do you grow them? Are you having any trouble with them this season?
You know, strawberries, to be honest, is another one of those things like broccoli for me. It's like I'll have a good season and then followed by two not so good seasons. So it's one of those things where we're constantly learning. Yes, we attempt to try to grow strawberries every year. Some of the locations, as you know, we're in different locations across Cincinnati. So there are some neighborhoods, believe it or not, that they just grow better in than the others. So we're getting better at knowing where to focus on them. But yeah, we love strawberries. And the problem with them is because of how sporadic a good crop comes in, the minute we see the strawberries growing, somebody's eating it right away. So any strawberry that we grow on our farms is typically for the people that work there and for us to enjoy ourselves.
Well, you deserve that. That's fair. Joe, what's this fungal disease that's causing trouble for some strawberry growers in Kentucky and Ohio?
Well, Lucy, you have to pronounce it for me to progress on this.
I tried that. I looked it up yesterday. I practiced a few times, and then I thought, Joe Boggs is an entomologist.
No, no.
He knows a lot of fancy Latin. He should be able to do this.
Well, okay, so here we go. It's Netta pestiloteopsis.
Well
How do you
done.
Like that?
I wish we had a little bell to reward you for that. That was really good.
With a $20 strawberry, I'd go for that.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a fungal disease. And when we say newly emerging, it doesn't necessarily mean it wasn't around. This has actually been around for a little while. It's just that it's really starting to show up in the production of plugs. Now, I'm sure that particularly Dominique and Corey can confirm all this, that, you know, in a typical strawberry patch, we have the runners that move between the rows year after year. So you can keep a patch going for quite some time if you just let them run into the row, and then you get rid of the original row, and you can put down straw, the strawberry, and that sort of thing if you're growing them outside. But periodically, it's not a bad idea to reinvigorate a strawberry patch by buying in plugs, and particularly if it's being done for retail or wholesale. And of course, you have to buy in plugs to get new cultivars, which is also a very good idea to keep things vibrant, keep things going. So this disease that shall not be mentioned again, right? Because I'll probably stumble the next time. I can only do it one time. It affects basically all parts of the plant, the crown, which is the growing point, the leaves. It also infects the fruit. And you just see this gradual, thinning out. And of course, obviously you don't want to buy this. You don't want to buy plants that have the disease. So the producers of plugs are really pulling back. They can't sell them. They can't sell to some of our local growers, for example. And it's presented a bit of a challenge. This year, there are some places that will not have the strawberries like they've had in the past. And hopefully, well, I shouldn't say hopefully, we will get through this. I mean, there will be an answers or answers that will come along. Most likely, work done on more resistant varieties, which my understanding is they're already kind of seeing some of that. And so this year, it's just simply a bad thing. But if you remember, Lucy May, several years ago, we talked about a pumpkin disease that seemed was just about to wipe out a Halloween, right? We eventually made it through that as well. So that's kind of the long view right now. Okay, this disease is just reminding us that nature always has the upper hand, even when we think we can control things, right?
Maybe we get a $20 strawberry that's the size of a pumpkin and we could wrestle with a few
of
these things.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But we're talking about gardening for the full hour today, and our experts are here and ready to answer your questions. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Okay. Corey, what are you doing to get your garden ready for spring?
So what I've started doing, I've got my seeds ready to go. I think this weekend's going to be when I actually get them started inside. And I'm itching to get out there. The weather's perfect right now. I'm trying to be patient though, because I've lived in Cincinnati long enough to know that the weather changes on a dime. And so I am starting to think about, okay, where do I need to mulch? Where are the areas in my yard that are going to need the most work? I'm making the plans, right? What am I going to do the first weekend? What am I going to do the second weekend? I'm starting to think about layout for my garden, not necessarily, digging in the soil yet, but where am I going to put things? So it's a lot of planning. For people who just can't resist right now, I think you can start some planters. If you wanted to start putting some plants in a pot, you can always bring those inside if it starts to dip below freezing again. But right now, it's all in the planning stage. I'm going to be patient, because next week it could be back in the 30s again and all my work would be for naught.
Yeah, that patience, that's tough when it's so pretty outside.
It is so hard, but it's, I see people going to buy annuals at, stores now, and I think, oh goodness, in a week, are they still going to be alive? Whether it's flowers or fruit, produce, herbs, just resist the temptation. And also cleaning up your yard. Right now, a lot of the stem nesting native bees, a lot of them will start to emerge in the next couple of weeks. And so I'm just letting all of my flowers that were left over from fall, I'm just letting them stand. I'm going to let them go before I cut them to make sure that all of those sort of nesting bees that were in the stems of those plants have had time to emerge.
Yeah. Dominique, how about you? Have you been able to resist the temptation to get out there and just start digging and planting with the weather as nice as it's been?
Not really. In my position, I don't get to do the fun stuff as much as I used to. So now anytime I get a chance, I go and do something. But, you know, last weekend it was nice outside. I just went over to the greenhouse and started up potting plants, you know, because it was I sat outside, enjoyed the weather, and, you know, can't bring the plants outside yet. But, you know, we're moving them to that next stage inside the greenhouse. So that, you know, that's pretty much where we're at. We started, like Corey said, prepping the sites, basically, is just walking through, starting to plan the layouts. It was fun yesterday because we were doing that at our farm on Xavier's campus, and we are starting to see the garlic from last year pop up and stuff like that. So there's so much life that's already coming through. But again, me, I'm still kind of shocked from, I think, two seasons ago when it was right about this time. We had a week or two of good weather, and then we dropped into the single digits. And you know, anything that was outside at that point was basically null and void. So I'm still a little shocked from that. So as much as I can, I'm just trying to do things inside the greenhouse to keep my hands busy until I can move outside.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if anybody on the panel was here in the 90s when there was snow on opening day, when they had to clear snow off the Reds field to play the game. So, yeah, do not be fooled by the 70-degree temperatures, people. It's trying to trick you. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Aya, this is Lucy. How are you? Thanks for listening. And what's your question?
I found a strawberry plant somewhere, and it's about 10 years old, somebody told me. But they also told me that after a while, it doesn't produce fruit. Is that true? After so many years or rotations of producing fruit, does it just stop producing fruit?
That's a good question. Do you know, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, if you have a single plant that's managed to live for right. You know, that long, then that individual plant, like I call them the mother plant, may not actually produce as much fruit. But strawberries have these little stems that reach out, the little runners, and then the stems will set root and create a baby plant.
Another plant.
So those baby plants should still produce fruit for you, even after 10 years, even though the first initial plant, they may actually not produce fruit anymore. Just, you know, like me, they're just tired.
That's more like me. I'm not producing fruit anymore either.
Oh, man.
Have you tried to plant it? Have you seen any of those little baby plants coming up?
Yes, I have. And I split it up and planted it in different pots in a vertical planter. And it's alive, but I just didn't know if I should wait to be hopeful for new fruit or if it's just a pretty plant.
Yeah, you should be fine. Sometimes buying a different cultivar and planting it nearby the old one, sometimes having a cross can increase fruit set, sometimes not. I would say just you should be fine. It sounds like it's happy, and I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Any other advice from you, Dominique, with your strawberry experience?
Well, I was just going to say the same thing. If she's separated the runners and given them a chance to kind of start on their own, they should be fine. And it is good to get a new plant to mix in there just so that they, like Tori said, so they have something to kind of cross pollinate each other and stuff like that. But if that plant is still producing the runners and she was able to put those in other pots or plants, then I'd say give it a chance and see what happens.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for calling, Aya. I hope that works out with your strawberry plant.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. We have some emails, too. We have an email from Monica who writes, "My boxwoods were decimated late last summer. They showed some new growth in the fall. Is there hope for regrowth, or should I replace them?" Joe, I'm going to let you answer that first because Corey audibly rolled his eyes.
Oh, no. Well, given it's his favorite plant, yeah, I'm surprised.
Oh, I know.
You know, Corey, I'm sorry. We're gonna keep that one going, me and Lucy. But but it just depends on what's going on with it. It's highly likely from your description that it could have been a leftover from winter damage from the, 2 years ago, actually. It's still catching up with us last year. I don't know. Did they mention the location, Lucy?
Nope. Monica did not mention the location.
Okay, because we do have in our region box tree moth. It's a caterpillar that feeds on boxwoods. I would not, though, whether it's winter damage, then a subsequent disease that takes advantage of the damaged tissue, or if it's box tree moth, I wouldn't react too quickly to pull it out, because if it's an established boxwood, it will have an extensive root system that can support regrowth. And the nice thing about boxwoods, we've been doing this for forever. It's called rejuvenation pruning. They take very well to cutting back and then regrowth. And the regrowth in the spring is phenomenal. And the other thing is that they will still bloom. And one thing that I always remind people about boxwoods, they are a very significant plant for pollinators. We overlook that because the blooms are very small. They kind of go fly under the radar, so to speak. But having boxwoods in landscape provides a fairly early nectar source. As Corey mentioned, for example, some of the solitary bees, in this case, soil nesting bees, we often find them at Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum just swarming the boxwood. So I think I would assess the plant to see how much life is in the main stems. And if you scrape the bark a little bit and see there's a little green under it, then I'd just simply cut back. Now, if you're in a spot where you do have box tree moth, then you'll have to monitor just to make sure you're not getting the caterpillars there, on the new foliage. If you are, there are numerous materials, including quite a few biorationals that won't kill other things, that you can apply to take out the caterpillars.
Okay. Well, we are going to continue our gardening show after a short break. Now's a great time to call. If you've got questions, call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with today's gardening show. My guests are Ohio State University Assistant Professor of Entomology and Hamilton County Extension Educator, Joe Boggs, Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, and Brick Gardens Founder, Dominique Peebles. They're ready to answer your questions. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have Kathy on the line. Thanks for calling, Kathy. What's your question?
Hi. Quickly, I was just wondering if there was a non-invasive ground cover that they might recommend. I was thinking about planting some peas and oats in the southern part of my garden. And then the second question I have is just, how do you go about safely trimming a boxwood that might have some diseased cankers?
Okay.
Thank you.
Corey, I'm going to let you talk about ground cover, if you want to talk about that first.
So is this it's a ground cover that you want to put in your garden? Is that right?
Yeah, around a tree, actually, a newly planted bald cypress.
Okay. Knowing that it might get some sun if the tree is younger, I'm a real fan of wild ginger. I know that's typically a forest species, but I have some in my yard now that does great in sun or shade. It's sort of three season ground cover. In the dead of winter, it's going to die back a little bit. But I really love it. It's really easy, low maintenance. There's another species that I've had less luck with, but a lot of my friends have had more success. It's called Allegheny spurge. So there's a Japanese spurge that's regularly on the market, but there's a native spurge, Allegheny spurge, that a lot of people have had good luck with here. But for me, you can't really beat wild ginger anytime somebody mentions ground cover. The other option is if you go to like a creeping phlox, that'll give you a little more color. There's a variety of species. You can look up which of the few you think would be better for your yard. But I would say between wild ginger and creeping phlox, those two are pretty hard to beat.
Joe, I'm going to let you tackle the boxwood trimming and pruning question because I know Corey would just want to take a flamethrower to the whole thing. So what do you recommend for boxwood pruning if there are cankers, Joe? Do we have you, Joe? Uh-oh, did we lose? Oh, there you are.
No, I'm back. Okay. I had myself muted, and I just provided the best answer, so I'm sorry I can't repeat it. So you start at the top, work your way down with hand pruners, and this time of year, you know, with boxwoods being evergreen, meaning that, you know, if you don't have leaves now, then you won't get leaves. So work your way down, clipping, and then looking at the ends of the clipped branches or the clipped stems. If they're white in the center and kind of have a little green along the edge or the outside ring, then they're good. If they're brown in any part of it, then that means that you are still above a canker or just simply dead tissue. Just keep going down until you find clear, what we call clear wood. So you're looking at the end of the cut and it's clear. It doesn't have any brown staining or anything that's off color. And that's where you stop. Well, I say that's where you stop, though, but you do also want to kind of stand back and say, well, you know, if I prune this and stop there, I'm just going to have this kind of wild stem sticking out there to the side, and it's not going to look right. So do a little shaping while you're at it. You may, in some cases, need to go further down, particularly along the edges, to help shape things up along the, you know, the outside of the shrub. So just do both at once. And as I said before, boxwoods respond very well to that type of pruning. It is called rejuvenation pruning, whether you're taking out diseased tissue or responding to box tree moth or not. It's actually very helpful to maintain a healthy plant.
Kathy, I hope that helps.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you for calling. We also have Emily on the line. Hi, Emily. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hey, thanks for having me. I have a question about invasive honeysuckle. I have some in my yard, and I'm working to cut it all down, and I just am kind of questioning, like, what's the best way to dispose of it, because I know it can kind of regrow from rhizomes, is my understanding, and I was also curious, if I was building some raised garden beds or more garden beds, could I put them in the bottom for, like, a hugel culture type situation there, or would that be a bad idea because it can regrow? Just wondering, like, if I can use it for that or what the best way to dispose of it would be.
Corey, you want to take a stab at that?
Sure. So the invasive shrub honeysuckle is a problem to get rid of, as you know. So I would say, yes, if you are trying to pull it out of the ground, if you don't get all of the roots, they will re-sprout. So when we remove it, we actually will pull the cut the shrub, and then we use like a dauber or like almost like a bingo marker, kind of a with like little, it's like a tube with a little sponge on top, and you can dab the cut part with a herbicide so that you're not, you know, spraying everything, but it definitely will kill the honeysuckle. But if you're just pulling up everything by the root, you do have to get it all, or it will re-root. What we do is if you just pull it up and leave the root exposed to the air for a couple days, that's going to kill the root, and it won't, and it's not going to re-sprout for you. If you wanted to put it in the bottom of a raised planter, I would just cut the root off and put, you know, the branches and limbs or whatever else you want could go in the bottom. But let it dry out for a couple days. Just leave it, you know, laying roots up someplace for a few days so it dries a little more. And that should kill it. And you shouldn't see any issues from that.
And then, Corey, you replant with boxwoods? Did you say that?
No. There are a lot of options. You know, I don't mind boxwoods as much. It's with the natives, they tend to have such fewer issues. I'm going to stop there, Joe.
Well, no, I will say this, Corey. This is a great opening. I was being a little facetious, obviously, but when people do remove, now she's talking about a garden, and so mm-hmm. she has plans. But what we often see, and I'm sure that you do this at Sensei Nature Center, you follow up with planting something that then starts taking over that spot, because the seeds can also germinate for these mm-hmm. Non-native honeysuckles. And frankly, you know, if we can put in a competitive plant, so what are some of the plants, I'm very serious, some of the plants that you all use at the Sensei Nature Center to bring back the wildness of that spot?
Spice bush is great. Arrowwood viburnum is great. Any of the native dogwoods, I think, are great. Buttonbush, especially for wet areas, works really well. But you're right. If you don't replace it with something, you will get, probably in another couple of years, you will get those honeysuckle back. But spicebush is the one that is sort of our go-to. It just seems to be the easiest and the most abundant for us, because we do have a propagation program. So it's easy to grow a whole bunch of those for using in restoration projects.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Emily. I hope that helps you out.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I appreciate you offering some examples of things to plant there, because that was something I was going to ask about. It's a wet yard, so it sounds like I will try some buttonbush or maybe some spice bush.
Yeah, if you've got wet soil, buttonbush just can't be beat. I've got a big one in my backyard, and I love it.
It's a huge draw for pollinators, mm-hmm. too. Yeah, it's really great. Yeah.
We're doing so much winning, we can't lose on this gardening show. Thanks for calling, Emily. I sure appreciate it. I want to remind our listeners, our gardening experts are here for the full hour today. If you have questions for them, and we know you do, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we have Ken on the line. Hi, Ken. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for talking to me. I re-sodded the front of my small yard last October in beautiful grass. But when I was preparing I noticed a lot of white grubs. And are they going to eat my grass? And if so, how do I stop it?
Joe, what do you think? I feel like I'm going to ask you this lawn-related question.
Well, I'm thinking about it. So the white grubs, where did you find them?
I had my little front yard sodded the year before, and it didn't really take. So I pulled up the old sod and then put down the new sod. When I pulled up the old sod, then I saw these white grubs, maybe, you know, an inch under the old sod or so in the dirt.
And then you had it resodded this past October? I'm just confused here.
That's right. So I had it. So after it looked terrible, then I resodded myself. I did it. And again, it looks beautiful, but I'm afraid, I'm just worried that the grubs are going to eat my new sod.
Okay. So now I think I have the chronology down. So those white grubs, of course, developed into beetles. And they could have developed into a couple different types of beetles. One that we most often think of are Japanese beetles, but their populations are not what they used to be. So it could very well be that these are mask chafers. We have a couple species that occur. Now, they primarily feed the grubs, the larvae, the immatures, primarily feed on decaying organic matter. So we often see them develop on lawns where there's high levels of thatch. You know, thatch is just non-decayed stem tissue, most commonly associated with Kentucky bluegrass, because it produces underground stems called rhizomes. And if they don't decay on their own fast enough, then the white grubs can make a living on it. I don't think I would assume, though, that since you've resodded, that you're going to still have the problem. Because as I said, you know, the Those grubs matured, they pupated, they, you know, they left as adults. What would draw them back, though, would be a lawn with very high organic matter, but you've already kind of fixed that by putting down sod. Now, this would be the real benefit. If you use a turf-type tall fescue sod, they actually have to use netting to keep that together. Turf-type tall fescues are bunch grasses. They don't produce rhizomes like Kentucky bluegrass, so they don't produce thatch. And if you've used that, then, okay, the grubs are just going to be not there. However, even if you use Kentucky bluegrass sod, there will be a thatch layer. It may attract some, but probably not what you had before, which may have been why you started seeing your lawn go out. So I don't think I would be too concerned right now about it. You don't really want to go out there and pull up a bunch of sod to look under it from last fall, because you're hoping by now it has knitted to the soil, the roots have grown, and I think I would just keep an eye on it. I would not preemptively make an insecticide application, because, you know, we urge that folks only do that if they have the target in sight. In this case, I would bet it's probably not going to be a problem. I think you may have solved it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for calling, Ken. And we also have Jim on the line. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Thank you. My question has to do with timing for starting annual flowers like zinnias and marigolds outdoors. Last year, I followed the old traditional guideline of waiting till after Mother's Day, and I'm wondering what, with climate change, I might be able to get away with doing it a little earlier.
Oh, Jim, everybody wants to do that. This nice weather. What do you think, Corey?
I understand with the warm weather wanting to do it earlier. I would still say do what you've always done. Wait until Mother's Day. Yes, climate change, I think in the next few years, you know, 10 years or so, we may see that it's actually coming to mid-April might be the last frost, but I have been burnt enough to be very cautious, and I don't like wasting a lot of energy and money on the seeds. You could start them indoors. You know, there's a little bit of green therapy there. If you have a sunny window, you can get them started early indoors. And do like that. That's what I'm doing. But I would really hesitate. I don't know, Dominique, if you have any specifics from your gardening world. But on my end, I just get worried.
Yeah, it's that thing with, you know, we always tell people, you know, check with your local last frost date, which, you know, in this area, that means nothing to us. But I mean, you know, so for me, there's certain plants I like sticking to things that I've always known. So Mother's Day is a good target. You know, there's certain plants that I don't put out before the first Saturday in May. And being from Kentucky, we say when the horses come, it's time to start moving your warmer weather plants outside. But we, you know, we've actually started our marigolds and stuff, because we plant a ton of those at our farm sites for pollinators. So again, we started them indoors, and that's where we're at right now. I always tell people, like, just, you know, farm at your own risk or grow at your own risk, but definitely, you know, just pay attention to the stuff that you've always done that's worked for you in the past. So if you've been patient enough to wait till Mother's Day, try that patience again. Yeah. It's the safest bet.
Can I jump in on something, though, Lucy, that we've kind of skipped over? This is the perfect time to plant trees. And, you know, I know we're talking a lot about, you know, okay, people want to get out there. I drove by a nursery day before yesterday, and boy, they have their B&B trees popped out, ready to go. And that is, that can be done. I mean, right now is just absolutely perfect. So if you really want to be gardening, get out there and plant some trees and take down those trees that may have suffered last year's drought, which I'm giving away what I'm going to be doing here over the next few weeks.
Little spoiler alert from Joe there.
Little spoiler, yeah.
Okay. Well, Jim, thanks so much for your call. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. We're going to take another short break. After that, we're going to wrap up our gardening show. If you have questions, now's the time to call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're in the home stretch of today's gardening show. My guests are Ohio State University Assistant Professor of Entomology and Hamilton County Extension Educator Joe Boggs, Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation Corey Christopher, and Brick Gardens founder Dominique Peebles. If you've got questions for them, call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. I will say we have a number of callers on hold. We've got emails to read, so we're probably going to enter the lightning round territory of today's show. Let's start with you. Jeanette, thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
So I had two burberry bushes along my sidewalk, and I live in a condo, and a couple of weeks ago, the people who do the lawn mowing also do some trimming, and so they came and trimmed those almost 3 inches from the ground, so they really just chopped them down. So I'm wondering if that's a bush that would come back, or if I need to just dig them out and get by something else to put there.
Goodness. What do you think, Joe? Any chance those Burberry bushes will come back?
Yeah, Burberry does have a same quality as boxwoods. It depends a little bit on the Burberry, but yes, I think that they did that probably because they were moving into the sidewalks presumably. And of course, Burberry has the barbs, so that's where the name comes from, and you don't want to have those right into the sidewalk. So I'd say you're okay. Just see what happens this spring, and then make a decision later in the season.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeanette. I hope that helps. We also have Dan on the line. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I got a neighbor who's got a big stand of bamboo. I volunteered to help him take care of it. But the one explanation, one bit of advice was to cut it close to the ground and put full-strength vinegar on it. I was wondering what your experts have to say about getting rid of bamboo.
Corey?
Cutting it as close to the ground, I think, is probably a good strategy. I think a lot of people use vinegar because it seems a little more, homeopathic or a little gentler. But if you put enough vinegar on your soil, it's just going to really lower the pH, make it more acidic. And in a lot of ways, vinegar can be worse for your soil than some of the herbicides that you could purchase. Joe may actually know some specific ones. I would say cutting it at the ground, and if it was me, I would probably try to find an herbicide that is specific to grasses, because bamboo is just a grass. And I would personally stay away from the vinegar.
Anything you want to add quickly, Joe?
I agree. The vinegar is just not going to be very efficacious. And yeah, you nailed it, Corey. Just get something that once you cut it back, specific for grasses, a systemic that goes in and kills the roots and rhizomes. I will have to caution, though, it may take more than one cutting back and application.
You're a good neighbor, Dan. Good luck with that bamboo.
Yeah.
Now we have Tyler on the line. Hi, Tyler. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking me.
What is your question?
So I just got a new house about a year ago, and I got a new little garden plot for it, and I did some cover crops over the winter, and the soil looks really good right now. I was just wondering if I should get like a soil test to see if I need to do any changes to it.
That's a great question. We always love talking about soil tests. Joe, what do you think?
Absolutely. We always say a soil test is a blood test for the soil. So, yes, get the soil tested so that'll guide you in what you need to do in the future. And by the way, do not overlook asking. It's usually a little bit of additional fee, but asking for a trace analysis that will guide you, or micronutrient analysis. It costs a little extra, but those elements are just as important as the macronutrients. So make sure and get that done as well.
Dominique, how often do you do soil tests with brick gardens? Is that a regular process, part of your process?
I would say, well, anytime we go into a new location, it's the absolute first thing we do. Because again, you can't really plan much if you're not working with a good foundation. And obviously in vegetable production, the soil is where it starts. So, and then if we have any, there are some sites that, there's one site in particular that we kind of test every season because the location already came with problems. Mm-hmm. It needed like a few years of soil remediation before we were actually able to grow on it. So we're a little more in tune to soil test in that spot versus the ones that we soil tested in the fall and stuff like that. But because we're partnered with so many schools and stuff like that, soil testing is nothing for us. So we probably do it in excess compared to some people. But anytime you're starting a new location, a new garden spot, you definitely want to make that your first priority.
Never in excess, Dominic. Never in excess.
Well, Tyler, you are on the right track. Thanks so much, and best of luck with your garden. We have Peter on the line. Hi, Peter. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. My lawn is kind of poor. I've never used chemicals, and I don't want to. And I was wondering what suggestions for taking care of and bringing and making a nice lawn. Also, along with that, I have in the past years, until last year actually, I had mold problems. So I want to smooth out the earth. I wonder if there's an easy way to do that. I saw online a very complicated and expensive and time-consuming way. I wonder if there's any shortcuts.
Let's see. Joe, are you the person to ask about this?
I can handle it. You heard what Dominic and we all talked about before. Get your soil tested. I have a feeling that could be the challenge. That's the most common problem we see with lawns. People are just shooting in the dark and don't realize they may have a very serious nutrient deficit that's just going to keep from you having success. As far as moles go, trapping is the way to go. If the soil's heaved because of the moles, it should continue to subside. We really hate to see rolling lawns, using a heavy weight to roll down those. If there's not a lot, I'd just simply stomp them down with your foot. The final thing is plan on overseeding if the lawn is really thin, but get soil tested. Get your soil tested first, and that'll help to guide you on if you need to do anything to support the new plants that you've overseeded. And at the very end, raise your mower as high as it can go. That is, unless it's a riding mower. But we want to see you mowing. Yeah, that's right. You want to see you mowing somewhere, as close to 3 inches as possible. Mowing low does not reduce time between mowing. It'll eventually reduce it because you'll kill the grass and won't have to mow. But you don't mow low, mow high. And that'll establish nice deep roots for you.
I hope that helps, Peter. We have David on the line. Hi, David. What is your question?
Good afternoon. My question is, when is the proper time to put your elephant ears bulb back into the ground for the new year? Because I took them, the neighbor told me to take them out, and in this year put them back in the ground to let them grow.
Okay. What do you think, Corey?
That's definitely after Mother's Day. So I see Mother's Day as being the go-to for when you want to put out any of those sort of exotic tubers. I tried with elephant ears specifically. I've tried doing it early and tried leaving them in the ground, and it never works. So well after at least Mother's Day, if not a little bit afterwards. I mean, they go pretty quickly, so you're not going to be saving that much time.
Hey, equal time here, Corey. Do we do anything after Father's Day? I mean, I just keep hearing Mother's Day.
Good question. Yeah.
Wow, Joe.
I'm sorry if they're thinking, well, yeah. that's a good thing to remember.
Well, thank you, David. Best of luck with
those. One more question.
Okay.
Where can you go, share with the audience, where can you go to get your soil tested at? Where is the facility or place to send it to?
Okay. Joe.
If you go online just type in Google, if you type in OSU, Ohio State University Soil Testing, You will see a fact sheet that lists a lot of all the different soil testing labs available. If you are in Kentucky, you would go to your extension office. If you're in Indiana, you can also ask your extension office. But the fact sheet that we have that lists all the labs applies to all the surrounding states as well as Ohio.
Okay. We have a ton of emails. I don't know if we'll be able to get through all of them. One of them was, how do you deal with thistle in the garden? Corey, any quick tips for that?
If you can't pull it up by the roots, certainly cut it and use a topical herbicide, you know, treat it over the top. There are some native thistles, so it'd be worth it to figure out if it's a native or the more likely invasive ones.
Okay. We have an email from Pat. The last 2 years, I've had fruit trees bloom out and then get frozen out. I have about 30 trees. What should my strategy be for future years? I'm afraid with global warming, I'll never get fruit again. Dominique, do you have any experience with fruit trees in your gardens?
We have one cherry tree, and it's we have one cherry tree, and it has been doing great. But I walked by it the other day because some of our trees are already starting to bud, and I was particularly worried about that one because that's one of our favorite trees, and it hadn't yet. If they're all fruit trees, it's one of those things where we're really at the mercy of the planet and the climate. I know that there's some things that you can look at depending on how big your trees are, as far as possibly covering them during a frost or things like that, but that would depend on, you know, how big your trees are, if you were able to do anything like that.
Okay. Super. And then we have more emails again. We probably won't get to all of these. Tim emails, any advice from the panel on what products to use to control lesser celandine taking over my backyard? This was a topic for a show. Corey, any quick advice for that?
Yeah, if you can smother it with a tarp. If it's a small enough patch, leave the tarp on for a few weeks. Otherwise, an herbicide, any of the standard herbicides that you may get over the counter, but you're going to have to retreat it multiple years. So it may take 2 or 3 years of application.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Ohio State University Assistant Professor of Entomology and Hamilton County Extension Educator Joe Boggs, Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation Corey Christopher, and Brick Gardens founder Dominique Peebles. Thank you all so much for your time today. Coming up next week, the recent winter snowstorm left some of us with unplowed streets. We want to hear from you. Did you get snowed in? City Council is considering whether to buy new snow plows. Weigh in on the discussion. Call 513-419-7100. Leave your name, number, and comment. We might use your message on air. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.